Hey, welcome to the Meat House. It is Jeff here, as usual, with Chris.
Hey, how you doing today? This is another wonderful day out there.
It is a great spring day. I know you're feeling the spring.
Oh, I feel the love of spring and, well, pollen, and oh my gosh, I'm hurting. But no, that's why they make wonderful things like antihistamines.
Yeah, no shit.
Well, in fairness, my doctor said my condition, my asthma condition, is only bad two times of the year, day and night. That's it. I'm good after that. I can laugh about it.
If you can't, then you're screwed, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So, today, first of all, I want to thank our listeners.
Yes.
Got a lot of positive feedback from you guys. I really do appreciate it. And, but, you know, I love you guys' positive feedback. Don't get me wrong. But if there's something you want us to talk about for you, by all means, let us know. We'll be glad to talk about what you're concerned about, too. And we see if we can help you out, too, because many minds make the work lighter.
Absolutely. Not only that, I mean, yeah, it's real fun to sit and drink and chat with Chris. But, like, you know, the stuff we're interested in, not necessarily the same stuff you guys are interested in. If there is something we can add to this conversation, we can help you in a layer that you are looking to discover on your own. Hey, throw it our way. We're happy to you know, kick over some branches, so to speak, and find the information for you.
And yeah, I know Jeff loves talking to me because I'm awesome. But you know, other than that, yeah, it's cool.
I'm supposed to be the arrogant one here.
Oh, sorry for that. Yeah. I got to stay in my lane.
That's right. Hey, we need to thank our other sponsor, though, Fox and Barleycorn. Jake and the crew over there are fantastic purveyors of all things fermentation and distillation and just the general good stuff you need, whether it's equipment or ingredients or, you know, reach out for some expertise.
Yeah,
do it. Means. They are a fantastic resource in this community where we are getting smaller and smaller numbers of homebrew stores and resources for people that are interested in homebrew. And, you know, with all these talks of tariffs and prices going up and things like that, I'm willing to bet in the next few years we might see a resurgence in homebrew. So
yeah, and maybe. I'm here for it, honestly. And I'll be honest with you, if you visit Jake at his store, by all means, he just made this lovely mixed berry cider.
Nice.
And I now want to make cider. It's so good. I mean, you'll hear, try this. I'm sitting here, oh, what did I just taste? He goes, it's really good. He goes, that's the mixed berry cider. I'm sitting here, I don't like you very much right now because now I have another hobby.
But it's not even cider season. Cider is in the fall.
Yeah, but I'm whining. But, you know, it was good. But, you know, but to visit Jake and his friends over to Box and Barleycorn, and if you go in or if you do this online, use our code MPH.
MHP10.
MHP, that's right. Where I am.
Meat House Podcast.
Meat House Podcast. To get yourself 10% off your order there. I've talked to Jake recently, and he and I are thinking about doing a community mead making session.
That'd be great.
So, yeah, I'm going to invite you to that if you want to be a part of that.
Hell yes. I you know me. I'm always happy to do the education and outreach kind of stuff like that when it meets my schedule, and yeah, love it.
Okay, and you know, I forgot, I'm the shy one. Yeah, but we're hoping to do an outreach and yeah, to actually teach people in the community how to make meat, like, on their own meat.
That'd be great. No, if we can get like a live session or recording on that too, kind of do a combo, it helps them, it helps us. Let's have at it.
Yeah.
So let's kind of segue into what we're drinking today. Today we have something from Prairie Rose Meadery. This is their Honey Mojito. It's a lime mead fermented with mint. Prairie Rose is owned and operated by Susan Rood. And Susan is, I kind of envy her because she studied microbiology and gets to do things with what she studied.
That's kind of cool.
I do not get that privilege. And Susan, like, you've mentioned before, I'm one of the smartest people you know. It's great to talk to me. I kind of feel that way about Susan. She is whip freaking smart when it comes to yeast. And anytime I get a chance to chat with her, like the competitions or at you know, various events and stuff like that, I always come away with feeling like, you know, I've gleaned extra information or a new, like, interesting point out of that conversation. And unfortunately, I'm also, like, usually a little tipsy at that point. I've been sampling meat or whatever, but
yeah, wouldn't know where that comes from.
But yeah, no, Susan is a treat to talk to, and I think I got to try this at a competition that not necessarily at a competition, but one of the like sampling events. If I remember right, this is the one that she made with chocolate mint that was grown in her own like home garden backyard.
You mean chocolate home garden or mint?
The mint variety is chocolate mint.
Oh, okay. Okay,
Yeah,
gotcha.
and I could be wrong. This could be a different one that. She may be making a bunch of stuff with mint that I'm just not aware of, but yeah, no, this is let's kind of do the tasting stuff here. So it is,
Light straw.
yeah, light to medium straw. Sheets the glass, maybe a little bit hazy, but pretty clear. Not gonna count off points for it.
Mild flavors there. Got a little bit of the,
I get a little mint on the nose,
yeah, a little
actually.
mint on that.
Maybe a little lime, but I might just it might just be that I'm aware of lime and it. Having to search for it.
I can't check. I can. I'm personally getting the lime, but I'm not really good at smell thing. So,
The honey, if I'm getting it, it's kind of getting drowned out by the mint, and maybe this is what I think is lime.
the flavor. Let's see. That's where it counts.
I like that so
Oh,
much.
that's refreshing. It's light.
It's got a nice acid bite from the lime. It's not in your face with like if you bite into a raw lime.
But the mint is making itself known there. It's still there.
It's there, but it's not overpowering, and that's really easy to do with mint.
Yeah, it really is. Like that's.
A lot of those herbs and spices, you can take a like a lavender or a rosemead, it turns into grandma's perfume real fast if you're not careful.
Yeah, this is really nice. And by the way, anybody out there listening to us, if you know of a meadery you'd like us to evaluate for you, see what you like, let us know what the meadery is. Actually, what I'm going to try to get us hooked up with very soon here is Mount Hope, Pennsylvania.
Really? I've not heard of them, I don't think.
Mount Hope is exactly, it was a monastery. I don't know if it is currently, but it was at least a monastery. They run a Renaissance festival out there every fall,
Cool. Okay.
which is why I went up there. And it's on the grounds of the monastery. And they make all their own alcohol, their meads, their wines, their liquors in-house.
Lovely. Wow.
And I tried their meads, and oh my goodness, they were good.
Okay. That sounds like it's worth
Man, they had
investigating
a
then.
pineapple that really stands out in my memory.
Wow. Okay. Well,
I'm going to make an order from them and hopefully get it fairly soon. We'll enjoy that on the show.
good deal. Good deal. I have a couple. A bunch of these meaderies have their clubs that they get. I've been a member of Sap House's club for a while. I've been a member of Op Gart's for a little while too, and I've got a little bit of a backlog of both of those. But I'm always willing to hear out more stuff. Going to these mead events, we get opportunities to do little bottle shares and trades and things like that, and come home with some nice stuff. I think I actually bought this bottle from Susan directly. Could be wrong, but yeah, this was a really nice one. I want to say I tried this at like the tasting party for maybe like the first Mead House Iron B that we did. What was that? 4 or 5 years ago now? Yeah, I
That
think that's
sounds about
right.
right.
Yeah, no, this is a great mead.
Yeah,
Really enjoyed
I'm.
this. So today we were going to talk about adding fruit to mead and the various ways to do that, whether it's things like fresh fruit or purees or concentrates, the syrups you get or things like that. So let's.
Even the dehydrated I've gotten, like I talked about last time with Daryl's Boar's Blood Punch,
Right,
is all dehydrated.
or the
Or not
freeze-dried,
dehydrated, it's freeze-dried.
yes, the freeze-dried strawberries you talked about a few episodes back in your strawberry meat.
Yeah.
I think those count too, so
Yeah.
we should definitely throw a mention for those in. Let's start kind of at the obvious one, pros and cons, whole fresh fruit.
Poor fresh fruit, yeah. Okay. I am currently in the process of using blueberry, wild plum, and apple in my mead right now. Actual apple.
Okay.
And even with apple cider. So not just the apple cider, but the apple as well in the same meat. Pros, you cannot get better than the taste of a fruit than using the fruit. It just, you can't. Son, it better be clean.
It does have to be clean.
It has to be super clean.
The other con is that you end up using a lot of fruit, especially on some varieties of fruit, strawberries, for one, like we were just talking about.
And you're also going to dispose of the fruit when you're done.
Including possibly a significant portion of the mead that is
Soaked into it.
soaked into it. Yeah. Some people squeeze the bag as they're pulling it out. Some people do not.
I do a little bit.
Yeah, I give a cursory squeeze to it, but I don't like take a big stick and try to like crank
I
it
don't wring
down.
it out. I want to get some of it out. I want to be comfortable with what I get out. I don't want to squeeze it dry.
Right.
Fruit is an amazing, I mean, the first time, I think it was at that fair we went to when you first had your, you talked to a guy about making mead. Mm-hmm. This guy was making out of 55-gallon plastic blue drums.
Right.
And he had a peach wine mead that was so good that I still occasionally will dream about it. It was that good. And that was, this was his last bucket of these, the barrels he was selling, the wine bottles he was selling at that event were the last ones he was making.
And this is an event we did before I met my wife and had a child. So my child is now 11 years old and change. This had to be what, 15 years
ago? 15, easy. 15 yeah. years. Oh, more than that, because 15 years ago, I was still in Yeoman. And it was before that.
So yeah, we're in that, like, within the first couple of years, we were hanging out in that 18 to, you know, 17 year range.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
And this guy, this was the last he was going to ever make. And it was so good. I mean, and he'd say, yeah, I just kind of stirred around, put it in. Why mead? And I'm sitting here going, you bastard, quitting.
No, and I was looking around drinking this and like, oh, there's all these girls in the corsets. They're all really enjoying this stuff. And
yeah.
So it's that easy? Like, I can make things that girls in corsets enjoy? Oh.
Well, I was married, so I wasn't looking at that so much.
You have your girl in corset already.
Yeah, you'll have her.
Dude, I had to work for it.
You know, she asked me to marry her. My job was easy. So anyway, but he made whole fruit. I mean, he would literally dump peaches or whatever fruit was in a 55-gallon barrel, dump the water in. I don't know what his water source was. Well, filtered water. I don't know. Threw his yeast in, poured it with a little bit of mineral oil on top, and stir occasionally.
Yeah, just let it go.
Just let it go. It's unbelievably good stuff. But anyway, fresh fruit has the bonus advantage of the skin of the fruit will give tannins.
Right. And that, you know, obviously that's a bigger concern in some fruits than others. Blueberries, for example, great source of tannins. You, if you're making a blueberry mead and you're not including some blueberry skins, I'm a little disappointed in you. I'm not judging. I'm just a little disappointed.
But you're missing out is what you're doing.
That is such a good source of the tannin and the color and the all those little things that make it just such a much more richer drinking experience. You should definitely be using.
Now,
by the same token, though, peaches, you get a little tannin, get a little extra color, flavor, maybe. But I don't think you necessarily need the skins of the peach. I'm assuming separating skin from flesh is going to be a pain in the butt.
Well, let me tell you, with a choke cherry, it's huge. I can tell you firsthand. I spent 8 hours one day de-seeding choke cherries.
Have you ever tried to make a mead with fresh whole cranberries?
Not yet. It's on my list.
That is a pain in the butt. And I'm not going to do it again. Okay. You know why? How do they harvest cranberries?
In a bog.
Right. They flood the bog and let the cranberries float to the top. What do whole cranberries do in a mead? Guess.
Well, I'm going to take a wild shot here, and they say they float.
They float to the top. And you know what the mead that you're making doesn't do with a fruit that floats?
Doesn't ferment it.
Doesn't get into that skin to float. Yeah. No, you have to individually. What I ended up doing, I actually did a test at one point where I took, like, I think I was going to put, like, 4 pounds of cranberries into a batch of mead, and 2 of the pounds I left whole, and 2 of the pounds I crushed.
Okay.
Maybe it was 1 pound I left whole, and 3 pounds I crushed.
Nonetheless.
Right. There were some I crushed, some I left whole. In order to get the yeast and the mead into the cranberries, I had to individually take each cranberry and give it a little, just thumb and forefinger, like a pimple, so that I broke the skin. Otherwise, the mead would not get in there. And the stuff that I left whole, it stayed whole. It did not ferment. Nothing happened to it. It might have gotten a little color leaching out of the skin. It might have gotten a little sugar leaching out of the skin. Not that there is any sugar much at all in a cranberry. I'm pretty sure that didn't count for much in the end of things. What communicated into my finished product meat. I'm pretty sure that was a wasted effort. Cranberries. Pain in the butt. I will forever use something different other than whole fresh fruit because such a pain in the butt. Two at a time, one in each hand, popping those little suckers.
Yeah.
My hands are tired.
Well, and you know, and the reason I even spend the time DCing whole fruit is because there are poisons in seeds I don't want leaching into my meat.
Yeah,
it's such a small amount; it's probably not going to make a difference. But in, for my comfort level, I take them out.
You know, there that is a point. The cyanide,
I think, cyanide
is the, right. the common one in like apples.
In apples, yeah.
But by the same token, like you're familiar with Disaronno, right?
Yeah, I am.
What is Disaronno made from?
I actually have no idea.
The common assumption is almond because it's a very almond-like flavor.
Right,
it's actually from the pit seeds of, I think, apricots.
Okay, there you go.
Which have cyanide in them. And it's an extraction that is like tincturing extraction. They're using liquor to get that flavor out.
I don't keep the pits.
If they can make Disaronno from that and not be killing people, I think you're okay. I'm not telling you not to do it. You do.
I don't believe I'm going to have enough of it in my mead to make a difference. And if I miss a few of these, I'm not worried. Mm-hmm. But just for my general mental comfort level, I remove seeds.
Fair. Like, I'm not going to tell you how to do your thing. Your process is your process. And I may say, you know, I don't think that's necessary. I'm not going to tell you stop. But I don't think that's necessary.
Yeah. Okay,
that is not to say that sometimes it's not a good idea to remove seeds, because the thing is, if you're doing a long ferment and you're leaving on the fruit for a long period of time, sometimes those seeds have very bitter parts. The thing that I warned you about, I want to say 2 months maybe, when we were first getting started.
Yeah,
I don't exactly remember, but like the difference between like sticking all your fruit in a blender and like basically hand crushing is that when you stick fruit in a blender, the blender does not give a shit about seeds.
Yeah.
It will break open seeds and you'll get some bitter compounds and stuff like that out of the seeds that are nasty. You don't want those. That's kind of my only point of caution with that. If you're going to be doing a long ferment where it's going to be sitting on fruit for a long while, maybe it's a good idea to take the seeds out of there, because you never know, if you're sitting for 3 or 4 months, you could get some bitter compounds leaching out of there.
Yeah. And I often have mine sitting for 3 or 4 months, often, because, you know, I, just for the sake of what it is, I will ferment dry and back sweeten more times than not. You know, like I said previously, I like my sweet meads, but I want to control the level of sweet.
Sure.
And if I do it from a dry or from a semi-dry or even a semi-sweet, it's easier to get to where I want.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, and that's why, you know, I will spend the 8 hours with choke cherries trying to, and they are not free seed. The seeds are not separated from the meat.
No.
You have to work at it. And my hands were red. it was one of those things, but you know, but that's fresh fruit. And right. Fresh fruit, there are people who tell you out there, if you're not using fresh fruit, you're not making real good mead. And that's not true.
No.
That's categorically untrue. I made some fantastic meads with the next category I'm going to talk about, syrup.
Yeah. Well, like we said last time, no one's calling the mead police on you.
Yeah.
So, no, let's do that. Syrup. Syrup is a great alternative to a lot of cases, especially cases like we talked about with stuff like strawberry, where it takes a lot of fruit to get the flavor that you're looking for.
Now, just to recap that, I made a strawberry mead that I took 35 pounds of fresh strawberry, juiced it, and made a mead.
For a 7-gallon batch, right?
For a 7-gallon batch.
So about roughly 5 pounds of strawberry per gallon.
Yeah.
5 pounds of strawberry per gallon. The cheapest I have ever seen strawberries. The sale price for strawberries that made me go, okay, after work I have to go buy strawberries, was $1 a pound.
Yeah.
Usually it's like, what, $3-$4
a pound? $3-$4 a pound.
Like,
mine was like $2. I spent a chunk of change.
It's almost as expensive as honey.
Yeah.
Hey, watch your sales. Watch, see where your supermarket flyers are coming and things like that.
You make friends with your local produce department. Sometimes they're willing to sell it to you cheap at the end of its life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use it that day, nobody knows.
Late in the afternoon at a farmer's market, you know, if they've got stock that's going to go bad otherwise, they may be willing to move it or give you a bulk deal or whatever. So, it does not hurt to be friendly.
I mean, and the worst they're going to sell to you is, no, I'm not going to sell to you at the lower price. Move on.
Yeah.
That's the worst that's going to happen. Yeah. Nonetheless, but 35 pounds of juiced strawberries. And when I finished that mead, it was a honey mead. It was no strawberry in it. And there were 35 pounds worth of juiced strawberries in that mead, but there weren't any. I added so much other strawberry in there. Anyway, onward.
Right. We were talking about syrups, and I think that's a perfect illustration. I think either of us can say, having tried to make strawberry meads with whole fruit strawberries, hey, let's try that syrup stuff.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, especially we're talking about like the Vintner's Harvest kits that are made for a 5-gallon bottle of fruit wine. They are a 5-gallon batch.
Oh, fruit bottle. Wine, yeah.
They are formulated to give you a distinct fruit flavor. And basically, like in this case, we're talking about making a kit for a fruit wine and then just kind of fudging it a little to make it a mead, too.
Now, mind you, I'll take that same gallon of syrup and put it in a 7-gallon batch of mead because my honey's going to take up space.
Right. I usually do a 6-gallon batch. So I assume, you know, I'm going to add another 20 to 40 points with honey. On top of the, usually it's a 1080, I think, for a lot of those guys, when you mix it at 5 gallons at the water to syrup ratio that they recommend.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll try to go to like 11 or 1120.
Okay. But, you know, because I'm adding honey, I can fudge that a little bit and not use a single gallon
right
to make me a good 6-7 gallon batch of meat. But I'm using a syrup that's concentrated into a syrup. Now, the syrups can be $45 or a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
That's a deal. I kid you not. It's a deal.
Compared to 35 pounds of strawberries.
Yeah.
I mean, forgive me, 35 pounds of strawberries.
Was $70.
Yeah, easy, if not more.
In my case, it was $70, so they were on sale for $2 a pound.
Yeah. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's...
Even if I did it at $1 a pound, that would have been $35.
Right.
And I still would have been doing a lot more for getting the flavor of strawberry out of my meat. Therefore, syrups are your friend. They really are. And so many people use syrups. I use Venter because it's what I have available. I don't know if any other varieties are available, but they're so good I'm not inclined to move.
Right. And here's the thing. Vintner's Harvest is the one that we have at Box of Barley Corn. We've had other alternatives in the past. They've carried other alternatives in the past. One of the things that they carried a lot more of prior to getting Vintner's Harvest and the broad line that Vintner's Harvest had was another thing we could talk about, purees. Purees are exactly what they sound like. It is fruit, usually it's in a quart-sized can, and it is ground. So you're getting some of the fruit skins and the fibrous material of the fruit still included, including, like, incidentally, with blueberries, some of the skins.
Yeah.
So it could be worse.
It's pureed fruit.
Right. and it's usually... In most cases, this is a canned product, so it's at its freshest when it's processed into a puree, canned, and stored for long-term use. You're getting a fairly good, like, product at that time.
Again, nothing wrong with using a puree. I recommend if you're going to use a puree, put it in a bag.
Absolutely.
Put it in a bag. Because believe me, I made a horrible mistake if I put all of my chokecherry into the bucket, ground up, loose, and I was scooping it out for a long time. Now, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, I was scooping it back out when it was finished. Put it in a bag.
Put it in a bag. Yeah, no, absolutely. That is my biggest con for purees. You get a fruit that is pretty good, pretty fresh, and it's been a little bit processed, but not so much that you're going to lose a lot of the flavor or the factor of it, but you're going to lose, when you rack, you have that, the crud, the detritus, the yeast cake at the bottom. That's going to be significantly bigger because you've got a lot of that fibrous stuff from the plant matter, from the fruit and stuff, settling with it.
And even when you're doing your fermenting, you're going to have foam on the top, which is fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to push through your airlock, and you're going to change your airlock more frequently, and it's just a hassle. Now, on that note, something we have not brought up in the past, I want to bring up now, because it's happened to me a couple times last month. We put an airlock on your buckets or your containers. That's great, but until the fruit, whatever, pushes through it, and you have this mess inside your airlock, there's an option. If it's happening frequently, it's called a blowout tube.
Mm-hmm.
You take a tube that fits into your, like, from your racking cane or whatever the tube you use, put it in the hole of your where you'd put your airlock and run it into a container of your sanitized solution and just let it go. And then nobody cares if it blows fruit out through that because it's contained. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to have to change your airlocks out. You're good. Mm-hmm. I had to do it twice.
Generally speaking, what I have discovered is if you're using like the auto siphon kind of tube, there's the, I forget the exact interior diameter of it off the top of my head. I want to say 3/8, but I could be way wrong. That particular inner diameter tube for your auto siphon happens to be almost perfect for the outer diameter of the whole bung hole for either the airlock or the little spigot.
If you're getting your tubes, thing. Especially if you're getting it from Bacchus, the right. tube you're getting from for your auto siphon will fit into the airlock hole. Mm-hmm. It will fit. I mean, I've done it, like I said, I've done it twice in the last month, both for my wild plum and for my pomegranate.
Right. And the funny thing is, the mead that I most consistently have to use a blow-off tube for is not even a fruit mead. Technically, really? Hibiscus,
really,
for whatever reason, just makes the yeast go buck wild. And there's enough protein in the hibiscus apparently that it creates foam and it needs an a blow off tube. So yeah, no, with blow off tubes,
Next time I do my banana, I'm doing it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's a lot of fruit fiber that just, and for whatever reason, banana fruit fiber is a very light fruit fiber. You know, I don't touch banana because I've seen so many horror stories of the banana bombs attacking people's kitchens.
I was very close for like a week. I was very close to painting my ceiling with my mead.
But yeah, blow off tubes are it's a good thing to know. It's a very common thing to know. If you've just got like one or two fermenters, toss it into an empty wine bottle.
Yeah, and just fill up halfway with your sanitized star sand
yeah.
solution. Put the tube under that, and nothing's going to get in you don't want in, but I guarantee you're going to be much happier with not having to change out your airlocks.
Absolutely. The fact is, we see that if you go to like an actual winery or brewery, more often than not, if they've got something fermenting, you'll see like the what is it, 2-3 inch wide brewery hose that they use tri-clamps for. More often than not, you'll see like one of those hoses sticking into a bucket of some kind of sanitizer and bubbling away if they're fermenting something.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, this is an industry common thing. So use it. It's great.
Yeah, and until I was told, I mean, I remember calling Jeff, what do I do this? Just make a blowout tube. What in the heck is that? Put a tube in the opening, you run into a bucket of a container of sanitizer, and you let it do its thing. Within a week or so, it's going to calm down.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Yeah. Usually, if you need a blow off tube after a week, you should contact a yeast supply company and get that turbo mutant yeast
discontinued.
Well, either discontinued or slanted for further research, because what should we do with this monster?
Yeah. I mean, when I made my banana, I put a 5-pound kettlebell on top of my bucket. With a blowout tube. And I was afraid it was going to blow. With a blowout tube, mind you. I was afraid it was going to blow the lid off the bucket and paint my ceiling with banana flavored mead.
I mean, if you've got a 5-pound kettlebell on top of it, I'd be more worried about it splitting out the sides and, you know, giving you a new floor
cover. It still was bulged. The top was still bulged, buddy. In my defense, I put 12 pounds of mashed banana in that bucket. That was a lot.
That is.
I didn't realize how much I was putting in. So I got the recipe. It was turned out. What it ended up making was a chocolate banana mead, and it's actually very nice. When it was young, it would taste like you ate a banana and washed it down with a Yoo-hoo chocolate drink.
Okay.
But now it's mellowed up very pleasantly.
I need to try some of that sometime. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be glad to bring it over.
Yeah.
But no. Syrups. Syrups are your friend.
Syrups are great. Another thing we could talk about here, and it's in a similar idea, but concentrates. I don't know if you've seen like the Amaretti concentrates.
I've seen them. I've never used them. I'm going to let you lead this one.
They can be very nice, and they are in a similar idea of syrups. They are more what I would consider something you would want to do in like a secondary or the right before bottling phase, mm-hmm. if you will, when you're wanting to add extra flavor.
Okay.
Because... I mean, obviously, not all syrups or concentrates are created equal. You can get some, you can go to the supermarket, for God's sakes, and get rum extract. And I know some people that they do that for a little extra flavor. You can buy almond extract or raspberry extract, cherry extract, stuff like that.
You can get any number of extracts. I've been to bakery stores. They have a shelf of extracts.
Exactly. Well, even the supermarket 3 blocks away from here has at least a dozen. The common ones you would use in baking. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with using those, but that's not going to give you the true source of flavor. It's been maybe 4 or 5 years, but we've talked to Alm already before. They, as opposed to other sources, use usually high quality fruit. When they're making a fruit concentrate, they're using good ingredients so that you're getting the purest expression of that flavor. Now, sometimes you can get other stuff from them. I made a braggot with a s'more concentrate
I would love to try that. I want to try it so bad.
That's a beer, so there was hops in that.
Ah, damn it.
Yeah, I think I already drank it all anyway.
Oh,
That
wow.
was 4 or 5 years ago too.
Yeah.
But
I may hurt myself just to try that someday.
no, they have a bunch of other fun flavors that are obviously you can't buy s'mores as a fresh whole fruit, but the sources of what they were using for those are usually high quality. They are made to go into either things that are commercially brewed, baked, or whatever. So it's a good source. There have to be other companies besides I'm already out there that are doing similar high quality ingredients. It could be worth a try. But like I said, these kind of things are usually what I would consider like they're a finishing product. They're there to give you that extra jolt of, let's say I'm making a mango hopped mead. That sounds like something I need to do, actually. And I need
That
my.
sounded good until the second part there. Sorry,
Shushing.
Yeah.
Some of us like
The
the bitter plant matter that you are allergic to and so profoundly affected by. But no, let's say I'm making a mango hop mead and my hops are going great, right? But that mango, it's just not presenting as much now that I've got all the hops and I've got the carbonation. It could be more. What you get from Mom Already are usually somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to like 8 ounce jars of just a, it looks like a kind of peanut butter consistency concentrate. And you can add that in to get the flavor bumped up the way you want it to. There are some people that have tried using that as like their sole source of flavor. I think you would need a lot to get to where you're going. But it's.
As a person who's tried to make peanut butter mead, yeah, you do. I mean, I made peanut butter mead so badly that I had to throw out my trial batch, and I'm gonna start again. But yeah, you have to use a lot.
And they are approaching something that is, like it or not, there are beer companies, wine companies, I assume mead companies that make fruit-based beverages. And they have to deal with the fact that, hey, it's not always orange season or peach season or whatever. You have to be able to get stuff out of season, use stuff out of season. And, if you are a local microbrewery and you need to make another 10 barrels of your peach stout,
It's not peak season. They're in the winter.
what you going to do?
What are you going to do? Yeah, I get it. I get it. There, and I'm not going to ever say you shouldn't do anything as far as flavoring. I'm saying you might be missing out on complexity by using just flavorings.
At the end of the day, it is still processed to some degree or another. They are cooking it down or dehydrating it or reducing it in some way or another. You're probably losing something in that process, even a small amount. I think that's why it's a good idea to do your research and find a quality brand, quality product that you like.
And this is also like Jeff and I experimented so much. I mean, I could have used just when I did my choke cherry, I could have just seeded them, put them in a bucket, and gone. However, I did reduce it. And I did that simply for the fact that I wanted less water in the fruit and more sugar in the fruit when I started. Did I, by heating it up and cooking it until it was a little more jammy, did I hurt the complexity flavor? Probably.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe not. But the problem is, my goal was different.
Yeah.
So, experimentation, 1 gallon batch experimentation is perfectly acceptable
Yes.
and highly recommended.
There's another thing that we could talk about here that, in addition to getting stuff out of season, that occurs to me is a great solution for meat flavors. We talked about fresh fruit, frozen fruit.
Frozen fruit is an excellent point.
Right.
I mean, I have my friend Tracy down in Texas. She has made, she quote, one of the best meads I've ever made, blueberry meads I've ever made with blueberries I got from Walmart, frozen food section.
The thing about frozen fruit is that, like we were talking about with with the purees and the syrups and stuff. This is fruit that is at its peak of freshness. They usually freeze it in a way that preserves its complexity. You're not going to get like the that firm like bite of the skin, but you're not biting into it anyway when you're drinking it.
No.
Generally, like for a lot of stuff like blueberries or blackberries and things like that, I prefer to buy frozen as opposed to fresh because A, it's a little cheaper. B, that whole freeze thaw process is part of just my go-to for breaking it down and getting it to where the yeast can get at
In a scientific aspect, when you freeze a watery fruit, like any fruit,
it.
you're breaking down cell walls, and when it thaws, more juice and things come out from the cells because they're already broken up on a cellular level.
Exactly. You're getting through the skins, the cell walls, little membranes and things like that that are keeping all that good stuff in there. Ostensibly, the fruit is there to either attract an animal to bring that the seed attached to that fruit somewhere else, or to help nourish the that seed as it's growing into another offspring tree. But yeah, no, that's
No matter what fruit I use, I will generally freeze it first.
yeah. It's the
Even if
freezing
I don't do
process helps
anything
break that
else
down.
but crush it after that, I will freeze it. And I've never been disappointed in that result.
Yeah, I think frozen fruit is a great way to go, especially from a like an economic and a use by standpoint. Highly recommend it. There are some fruits that works better, obviously. Blackberries, blueberries, I think work great as a frozen fruit. Frozen strawberries. Yeah, maybe I think we're still having that problem of that's a lot of strawberry mass to get the strawberry flavor.
Oh my gosh.
So,
I'm gonna be agonizing over how much work I had to do afterwards to get a strawberry flavor out of that thing for months, if not years.
let's flip the script and go from frozen to freeze dried because
Freeze dried.
that strawberry brings me back to that's another option. And I think this is another one of those kind of like the concentrates. It's kind of a like the last step finishing thing more than a put it up front.
Yeah. Agreed.
So you've done more with freeze dried than I have for once.
Okay,
I
so let me
suggested that to you, but
Yeah, but I jumped, well, as per my usual attitude, I jumped in with both feet. Kind of harsh. My strawberry was so bad, I added 800 grams, which I think Jeff moved it out to be close to a pound and some, over 3/4 of a pound.
800 grams should be something like a pound and a half, yeah.
Okay, but of fresh fruit. Or a freeze-dried fruit is what I used, and that was just to get enough strawberries you could taste the strawberry in my chocolate strawberry mead. Freeze-dried, it has a great advantage of you're just going to get the flavor of the fruit out of it. I mean, there's no water to water it down. You're getting that. If it's strawberry, you're going to get strawberry. If it's blueberry, you're going to get blueberry. If it's apple, you're going to get apple. Comma, it's dry. There's no moisture in there, so it's going to get that moisture from somewhere to release that flavor.
AKA,
Your mead.
yeah.
Your mead. You are going to be sacrificing an amount of your mead to get that flavor into your mead. Now, there are options to do around that. I learned this later. I could have added some spring water to it and simmered it on the stove and rehydrated it and poured it in. Didn't do that. I just threw the dry, freeze-dried fruit in and I lost mead out of it. Now, did I lose a lot? No, I did not lose a lot of mead. But it kind of depends on what you want to do with it. But by the same token, I got more strawberry flavor out of it because I let it sit there for quite a while. I mean, I'm talking several weeks because there was no vegetable like root or anything to get that out. It was just strawberry.
Well,
And it worked out well for me.
and I think we with that one, we return back to the to squeeze or not to squeeze. In this case, squeeze.
Yeah, I squeezed a lot on that one because that's my mead. It's
Yeah.
mine. Give it back.
Give it back. Give it back.
Spit it out, spit it out. Oh, but old joke. But
I
anyway,
know exactly the joke you're talking
yeah.
about.
But no, I wanted all that back as much as I could, and I squeezed the heck out of it. Did I lose some? Yeah, but not nearly as much. But by the same token, there was a lot of extra steps. It was a lot. I do not mind. I will not. If it comes up again, I will not mind using freeze-dried fruit again. I won't. There's two problems with it. One, that was kind of, I don't remember the cost, but it was expensive. It was expensive to get that much freeze-dried strawberry.
You're paying a lot by the ounce, and
It's a lot.
it's a lot.
But you cannot deny the results. And I would be a liar to say my wife doesn't occasionally say, "You spent what?" Last time I went, oh, just recently, I went to Box and Barleycorn and I got myself my first time ever 2 10-gallon buckets to make mead in. Told Jeff about this earlier. And my wife said, "Why don't you get 10-gallon buckets to make your mead so you don't have as many buckets around my living room?" She half thought that through because she assumes I won't be using the same number of buckets just with the 10-gallon ones. But I was very emphatic about when I went to Bacchus to get my buckets. I said, I took my wife and I said, "This is your last chance. Are you telling me you're allowing me to get the 10-gallon buckets?" "Yes, bought them." She'll never have to come. She'll never come back and say, "Why are you having so many buckets of mead?" "Well, I'm using the 10 gallons."
No take backsies.
No take backsies. And no, don't get me wrong. My wife and I have a wonderful relationship. She won't fault me for it. She will have a gripe about not having enough living room space when I'm doing it in cold weather. Because my basement's cold. And my yeast will simply go dormant.
This is the advantage of brewing in the garage.
Yes. Yours stays warmer than my basement. Anyway, but for freeze-dried, you're going to get a lot of the flavor you want. I am never going to say it's a bad idea. It's a good idea. Squeeze the heck out of it when you're done. The expenses, but honestly, I'd go with syrups, purees, or even fresh fruit if I could before that.
Honestly, yeah, and when you're getting to that point when you need to add something, yeah, you could use freeze-dried fruit, you could use concentrate. I think it's kind of a almost a dealer's choice on that, and a kind of a case-by-case basis where you're almost making a judgment call as to whether you want to do like a freeze-dried fruit or that very concentrated, kind of a consistency stuff, adding it in there. With concentrate, you're not going to be losing the liquid, at least nearly as much. You're probably going to get a little extra trub or detritus at the bottom of your fermenter. You got to rack off of before long, too long. Nature of the beast, that's normal, but you have a lot more potential to lose with the freeze-dried stuff.
Yeah, but
Oh my God,
the
by the same
flavor's
token,
undeniable.
it's the truest flavor you're going to get from a fruit that has been processed in some way, I think,
Yeah.
realistically.
So, and I can't think of any other ways to use a fruit other than the what we've gone over here so far. If there's anything you guys have thought of, I mean, I dried syrup, puree, fresh
Concentrates,
concentrate. That's really pretty much it. Now, mind you, if you're going into flavored concentrates, I've learned this again at Bacchus that they got concentrates galore on their shelf. I mean, just a little 2 ounce liquid bottles of concentrate, and not just fruit or even herb, but like caramel flavored, or there's a lot of things you can get out there with that. And so if you just want to tweak it a little bit, maybe the way to go.
Well, and when we talked about syrups, we talked about the Vintner's Choice that we get at Box and Barleycorn, but there are other options there too. Like you can go to natural grocers or your local co-op or Whole Paycheck, and get the quart-sized bottles of whether it's like black currant or black cherry. They have the kind of like whole fresh cider that I like to use for like 1 gallon cider batches, and you get a fermenter out of it. They have a bunch of different like little syrup containers or syrup like ingredients in 1 quart containers. That's a pretty good starting point too. It's perfectly reasonable.
One thing I've learned over the last 5, 6, 7 years of doing this, I think I've only done like six, but I did not realize how broad of a pool I had to select things from. And it's just getting bigger, to be honest, because when I first started, honey's honey. No, it is not.
Oh,
No, it is
hell
not. We
no.
talked about last episode. No, it is not. Last episode, the episode before, we have it, honey's not honey. Honey is an ingredient and a flavor. Fruit is a flavor and an ingredient. I mean, everything you do to this is going to make, at some level, an impact.
For sure.
Choose wisely. Do not mix your lemon with your caramel.
Why not?
Well, I'm not. I said that because it sounded bad until I said it. But it could work out.
Send your lemon caramel meads to
Yeah, send your lemon caramel mead to us. But no. But yeah, there's so many things out there, and I've never made a bad batch of mead. I've only made batches that I learned something from.
That's an optimistic way to put things.
That's what I do. Yes, I've thrown batches out, though they were not good, but I learned.
Yeah, no, I've thrown a couple of batches out. I've had some batches that I've drank privately, not being shared, because I'm not proud. I might have some problems, but one of them is not.
Well, okay. I'm not saying I'm proud, but I'm not saying that I'm going to torture myself either. So,
I don't know that I mixed them that bad, but
okay. Well, fair. I made some things that were that bad. So I said, well, I'm going to cry a little bit, curl up in a ball, and regroup and think of a new plan. But that one's got to go.
such is the nature of the hobby. Yeah. Okay. Well,
Hope it gave you some insight.
yeah, this has been a fun topic of conversation, just kind of chit-chatting and going through our different experiences
You
with it.
mentioned something a little bit ago about sparkling. I think that's
Yes.
a topic I want to bring up in a future episode because that I've never made a sparkling.
Yes, there are a few different ways to go about sparkling a mead or getting that carbonation in it. You can go the low tech route, especially if you're doing, hey, those of you that have tried the Mead House 8% or are thinking about it, that's a great candidate for even doing a, bottle conditioning sparkling mead. So, hey, go for it. Think about that.
We'll bring it up on another episode, but
Yeah.
I wanted to touch base on that because I want to bring that. We need to talk about that.
There are also like more, equipment equipment that required
There's
versions
always
of
more
this.
equipment.
Buying more equipment does not always make you a better bead maker, but it does make some of your mead making a little easier sometimes if
It
you've
does.
invested that money correctly. So it's the dangerous slippery slope of this hobby for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, have a great day. I'm so glad you joined us here on the porch. Jeff, take care.
Yeah, have a good one.